Now, whilst the coelacanth was thought to be extinct and then found living happily in our ocean, the black rhino is still around today, but in very small numbers, and on the verge of becoming extinct. They've become a conservation priority after years of poaching and habitat loss, and are now very closely monitored. Jed Bird, a guide and researcher at Addo Elephant National Park, is monitoring not only the numbers of rhino left, but also studying their hormones, as he explained to Chris.
On a sort of voluntary basis, monitoring the black rhino population for the park. I've been doing so for the last 4.5 years now. And recently, end of last year, we started a research project on the rhino to try and find out a little bit more about them from a hormone point of view. We're situated in the Eastern Cape, 70 kilometres inland from Port Elizabeth, a very, very diverse area. Addo is probably one of the leaders in black rhino conservation. We sit now with over 70% of this particular subspecies of black rhino within the park.
Tell us about the differences between black and white rhinos.
Yeah, there's obviously nothing to do with colour. The one is no more black than the other one is white. When the Dutch settlers landed in the Cape here, they named the white rhino the Veit Ranoster. Veit meaning wide. The white rhino is a grazer, so it's got that square lip for grazing. And then we interpreted that Veit as white, and so forth, just called it the white rhino. And then later discovered that the second species, which then was called the black rhino.
Because you had a white one, you called it black.
Yeah, exactly, yeah, had to balance. The black rhino, however, is a lot smaller, about half the size of a white rhino. It's got a pointy lip as opposed to that square lip, suitable for browsing. They feed mainly on leaves and twigs and things like that.
What about numbers?
That's the drastic part. White rhino numbers dropped to about 120 individuals in Natal, but through great conservation efforts in Natal, their numbers have been brought back. There's about 15,000 now to date, whereas black rhino numbers dropped to about 2,000 animals. And we're sitting now at about 4,700.
So why are they threatened?
Poaching, basically. Poaching and habitat destruction. And to give you an idea of how the numbers dropped, if you look at the period between 1970 and 1992, Africa lost 96% of all its rhino to poaching. It's seen as an aphrodisiac, the rhino horn. But the main problem and the main demand for it is in the Yemen tradition, when boys go from sort of boyhood to manhood, sort of a status symbol would be to have a dagger with the handles made of rhino horn. I forget the exact dates, but it was a period of about 10 to 12 years. 22.5 tons of rhino horn entered Yemen, which amounts to about 7,000 rhino that died as a result of that. And that only met 17% of the demand for rhino horn for these purposes.
So what are you trying to do to stop this? I don't just mean stop the poaching, but stop the decline in this so we don't lose another species.
The key now is to create habitat for them. And the research we're doing is trying to understand a bit more about their breeding biology and try and understand what are the most ideal situation and circumstances for this animal to breed in and try and boost their breeding numbers. What we're doing at the moment is busy validating the use of field kits, progesterone, androgen and corticosteroid field kits to study or to monitor those hormones. And how we do it is we extract it from the dung. So it's non-invasive. We actually don't even need to see the animal. What we do is we use camera traps. And luckily, rhino being like they are, they use particular spots to defecate. They use these scrapings that they often return to. So we'll put a camera up at these scrapings. The animal return, do its business. We can then identify the animal, collect the dung, and then run it. If it's a bull, we'll test its testosterone levels and its corticosteroid levels. If it's a female, we'll test the progesterone. We can tell if it's pregnant. We can see where the bull's testosterone levels are and how stressed the animal is.
We're actually going to head out into the bush now to actually take a look at some of these sites and find out what it actually looks like on the ground.
Right, we've just come out into the park. We're in an area that's one of the main waterholes used by quite a few animals or rhino in this area. We're lucky enough to stumble across some really fresh spoor here. If you have a look, you can see the typical three toes. That gives you an idea straight away what that is. This is black rhino. I know this because there's no white rhino in the Addo Park. But how you distinguish is that white rhino spoor would be a lot larger than this. And then at the heel or the back of the spoor here, white rhino have got a much bigger indentation. Okay, as you can see, the black rhino pretty flat there.
Three toes. about the size of your outstretched hand, if you put your hand across it, can you get some indication as to the size of this animal from the size of the footprint? Because with elephants, you can draw around the whole footprint. It gives you some indication as to how tall the animal is.
Yeah, there's a sort of rule of thumb. If you put your hand across a spur like this, an adult animal will be slightly wider than your hand. So you're looking at about 20 to 22 centimeters. This is a sub-adult animal. As you can see, my hand fits quite easily over the spur. Okay, I do know there is a young male moving around in this area. He's 5.5 years old. So this, you know, I'm hazarding a guess, this is more than likely this individual.
So would this be a good site to do the kind of monitoring exercises you're doing here in the park, setting up cameras to watch what the animals do?
This is a perfect site because, as I was saying, these game paths that lead down to the waterhole obviously channel animals to this area, and then they'll follow these paths down to the waterhole. So if rhino come from here, they sort of congregate in this area and move down to the waterhole. So you can see this is a typical area where we would put a camera, is where these paths cross or where they cross a road. That's typically a spot where these rhino would either urinate or hopefully defecate. And that's then when we would put up a camera trap. The animal would come past, do its business. Hopefully we'll get a series of photographs, see the notches on its ears, be able to identify it, and then start analysing the data from there. What do we do? Let's just follow the spoor for a little bit and we'll see if we can come across any dung.
Well, while we're out here in the bush, in the middle of nowhere, this is a wild animal park. Are there any predators around here that might see human as quite tasty?
Yeah, I wouldn't say it's tasty, but there are a few predators.
Speak for yourself, Jed, but...
No, there are a few predators out here. There are, you know, lion in the park, leopard, and then smaller carnivores like caracal, small spotted cat, things like that.
There were some pretty big bones we just seen there. What were they?
Yeah, that was the remains of an eland. That was, I don't know what killed it, more than likely lion or hyena. They're the only predators that could bring down something that big. Okay, if you have a look here. Here we go. Here we've got some rhino dung, which looks pretty much like any other large herbivore dung. But the secret lies here. If you break it open, black rhino, as I said, are browsers. They'll walk up to a bush, they pass a branch into their mouth with that prehensile lip of theirs. The way that their molars are aligned, they bite it off at a 45-degree angle. Okay, so if you're ever questioning what animal this could be, you simply just break the dung open. A, you'll see twigs. That will eliminate white rhino, because white rhino just eat grass. But then you could be sitting with the situation, is this elephant or is this black rhino? And then just simply look for this couple twigs bitten off at 45 degree. That tells you straight away this is black rhino dung.
It's pretty cunning that you can non-invasively go to the dung and measure these hormone levels. But what are they telling you? Why is that important?
What we're doing here is we're comparing the three different sections of the park, or three of the three sections that have rhino in it, which is the Addo section, the Nyati section, and the Darlington section. Okay, now these are pretty much the same population size in each section, but the variables differ from a case of elephant numbers, predation in the specific sections, and tourism numbers. The hypothesis is that with a higher stress level, they're not going to breed at an optimum level as they could. So we want to see basically what is the perfect scenario, perfect circumstances for these animals to live in realistically. It'd be great to put a rhino into an area and leave them, no one gets to see them, and they'll probably breed perfectly. But in reality, if you want to conserve these animals, people want to see them, people want to know a bit more about them. We just want to know sort of what levels of impact these animals can take and what levels of impact from elephant point of view these animals can take.
Because you need people to come and see the animals, sort of ecotourism, because that brings revenue to the park, it brings revenue to the region, and that means that people then respect the animals because they have a commercial value other than just for poaching. But at the same time, you need to make sure the animals aren't being so stressed they're not going to breed.
Exactly. It's a fine line, you know, you've got to keep that balance like everything. But yeah, as long as these animals are getting seen and are getting, you know, more is getting known about them, that's the way you're going to conserve them. It's the way forward.
Have you got any results yet, or are you still gathering the data and there's no trends emerged yet?
No, we've gathered quite a lot of data. Basically, what we can see now is when an animal is coming into estrus for the first time. We can tell when an animal is pregnant or when she's about to give birth, because the progesterone levels drop prior to birth. We can then also see on bulls, particularly when they're most aggressive or when they've got the highest levels of testosterone. We found that the testosterone levels increased from birth to the age of about 7 or 8 years old and then plateau and then drop off at about 21 years old.
What about the interaction with the viewing public, though? Have you got any handle on that yet, and how the stress of having people and vehicles passing nearby affects the animals?
Yeah, definitely. Just from monitoring them and seeing their movements, you can definitely see there's a trend in areas where there's, for argument's sake, in the outer section, it's a public section, there's quite an intricate road network, and there's a lot of vehicles driving around. And you can definitely see the time of day that these animals are moving and the areas that these animals are moving. They do tend to avoid roads and avoid vehicles and people.
Is it something they could get used to?
Most definitely. You know, that's what I was getting at with this realistic side of things, is that you can't expect to put animals into an area that they never get seen, because realistically you have to monitor them anyway. And if they don't see people or vehicles for 6 months, a year, and then all of a sudden they do, their stress levels are going to rocket. Whereas if they get accustomed to it to a certain degree, you know, a balanced degree, they won't get as stressed when they do hear a vehicle or when they do smell people.
That was Jed Bird from Addo Elephant National Park explaining to Chris why it's so important to allow access to rhinos, despite the temptation to lock them away for the good of the species.
Laying the facts bare. The Naked Scientists. For more information, look us up online at nakedscientists.com.